Case number 21-5919, Dana Lee v. David Russ. Oral arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Benjamin K. Rabin for the appellant.
Morning.
Morning.
I've requested 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
And my name is Ben Rabin of the Nashville, Tennessee Bar on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Dana Lee, who's the executor of the estate of Randy Groom, who is the citizen who was shot and killed in this excessive force civil rights case. The district court dismissed the lawsuit on summary judgment on qualified immunity grounds, holding on the first prong of the qualified immunity analysis in our favor that there was a question of fact as to whether the shooting was unconstitutional. But on the second prong, the district court held that it was not clearly established as unconstitutional based on prior case law. So that's the sole issue in this appeal, is whether or not the clearly established prong had been met. The case law is sort of all over the place of exactly what that means to be clearly established. How close do you have to find a case? There's case law that makes it seem like it's got to be pretty close. Others sort of in the ballpark. But at the end of the day, the question is, should a reasonable officer have been on notice that the conduct in question was unconstitutional? It doesn't have to be a case right on point. It just has to be sufficiently analogous.
What's your best case?
Our best case is the Sova case from 1998, which was well before this case occurred, which we believe was a much more sort of threatening situation of that suspect. The case indicates that the suspect was about 6 to 9 feet away at the time of the shooting. The prior actions with the officers was much more threatening. The suspect had knives, making verbal threats, basically came out towards the officers out of a house. They sprayed him with mace. He went back. He came out again. They sprayed him with mace a couple of times.
And Judge, I noticed Judge Campbell discussed the Sova case, and he distinguished it. Why is he not right?
I think that he minimized or maybe even misconstrued the facts of what was happening at the sort of the last minute. I think he minimized what happened before the shooting itself, where the suspect was going in and out and acting more dangerously in this case, but also sort of the final moments where the case makes clear that the suspect was moving towards the officers. There's a little bit of question, I think, between the two sides in that case. Was the suspect actually walking forwards? But at the very least, he definitely pushed a screen door open, at the very least.
Is there a question here about whether Mr. Groom was walking, taking one step toward Officer Russ or one step to the side? What's your position on that, whether there's a controversy, and if so, what is it?
There's definitely a dispute between the parties. The defendant, our Captain Russ, says that that Mr. Groom was walking towards the officer. Our position is there's clearly a step. There's clearly some movement. Our position is the video makes clear it was either perpendicular to or most sort of diagonal. That when it's tough to see from the videos, but the clearest way I see it is where he takes the step and then you see the officer approach him afterwards. It's a different angle.
You don't concede that Groom was taking a step towards Russ, correct?
Correct, yes, Your Honor. We concede that there was some movement. The district court, we sort of agree with the court's assessment of describing it as, I think they said, almost accidental, that it was a very minimal, first and foremost, but second of all, was not towards the officer. We think the video, and we're fortunate to have the video in this case that Your Honors can look at for yourselves.
Yes, I have at least.
And because in many cases, especially before recently, there is no video and we don't know what happened, and here we do. And I would submit, the case law provides that even on summary judgment, when there's video,
what's
Your Honors
can... What's your position if we think it's a step forward?
Even in that case, I'd submit that the movement was so minimal, the distance was so great, and his actions at that moment were so minimal that I'd submit there's at least a question of fact as to whether the shooting was justified in this case. And again, we're on summary judgment, so the question is just, is there a question of fact that a reasonable jury could find in our favor, even under the qualified immunity
analysis? The district judge found there was a reasonable dispute of fact. It was whether it was clearly established, as you started out, and that's the issue.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think that you can, the facts still come into play on the clearly established analysis as far as does this situation, how close is that to the other cases? And so to the extent that there are disputes of fact on the whether the shooting was excessive and unconstitutional in itself, I think also factors into the analysis of how close is this case to other cases.
So here, Mr. Groom was 30 feet away, right? Whereas you're saying that in Sova, the distance was much shorter.
Yes, that's one aspect of it. And as Your Honors, in your dissent in the Stuttered case, you stated that you, and we agree, there shouldn't be a distant, like a bright line of this many feet away. We've never taken the position that the amount of feet is dispositive in and of itself, but it's a factor.
I think that was Reich, but where I dissented, the Reich case. I think Stuttered was Judge Sutton's case.
I think, I'm sorry, I had it backwards,
we're
yes, Your Honor.
All the time.
I had that backwards.
We're just about to win this argument.
That's right. And I got my case.
All the
Honor said, I'm right.
Or
absolutely.
Right.
Wrong case, right, Judge.
That's okay.
But,
I just didn't want to.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. And so, and that's something that I think the Captain Russ, you know, pointed out here. And I don't think that's an unreasonable point, that if you're, you know, let's say, the, you know, however many feet we are right now, if I'm just standing here, even though I'm closer, that's less threatening than if somebody is, let's say, 30 feet away, but they're charging. If you've got, you know, somebody running at full distance, 50 feet, 40 feet, 30 feet, that even though they're further away, that's a more threatening action than somebody who's just standing there, even if they're closer. But in Stuttered, in Sova, I think there's both. I think that there's a shorter distance and the aggressive movement, at least pushing open the screen door, and certainly a suggestion of movement towards. Whereas in our case here, you've got not only the distance of about 30 feet, but a very minimal movement.
Remind me something I'm embarrassed I don't remember about Sova. Was Sova just making the constitutional violation point, or was it also saying that was clearly established?
Well, it reversed the district court's opinion, and I don't know that the court specifically recognized clearly established.
You know why? That's why I'm asking whether it mentioned another case.
I don't believe it did.
Okay.
But fortunately for our purposes, we don't necessarily care.
Right. It would help you,
yes.
Right? If Sova had said, not only does the plaintiff win here, it would obviously help you if they said it was a clearly established point because of case Z.
The court, I don't know that they, my memory of it from having looked over, they focused on was it unconstitutional, and they cited other cases for that, and I don't recall them specifically using kind of the magic language, you know, these make it clearly established.
But in
reaching prong one, they did cite to other cases.
But Sova was decided in 98, right?
Yes.
So by saying that there was a constitutional right at that point in time, that clearly establishes it. Correct?
Yes, Your Honor. So I think by definition, the court would have had to have made that conclusion, whether it articulated that or not. It would have had to, or else the case would.
Well, I'm interested in what else they cited, not the assumption. But if you don't, maybe just remind me on rebuttal if there are some.
I definitely recall there being cases that they compare to that they say, you know, this was excessive and all of that. But I just don't recall. So I know that there are cases cited for that principle, but I don't recall them saying, sort of expressly, therefore, under prong two, this makes it clearly established. So it's somewhere in between. I think they do point to cases that they relied on for the holding, but I don't recall them specifically. And I agree it would help, and I don't know that that's in the language. But I think at the end of the day, what's important about the Sova case is, you know, would that case in Sova make it clear after 1998 to a reasonable officer that shooting somebody who was further away and doing something less threatening than in that case, would that be unconstitutional? Does Sova, you know, would that put an officer on notice? And that's, I think, turning to the Stuttered case.
One factor that sometimes enters the equation is risk to other people. In other words, it's not just about whether the officer trying to enforce the law is about to get hurt. It's, okay, we have a very unstable person with a weapon, albeit a knife, not a gun. And is that a legitimate factor in today's equation?
It is, in the sense that there were not other people involved. It was just the officers, and I think turning back to the Wright case, that's something that stood out to me, where the court specifically said he was in a residential neighborhood and posed a danger to residents in the area. And in this particular case, I think the court may have even made a finding, and I think the evidence fully supports there were not other people in the area. It was a parking lot, But the officers, I believe, said that there were no other people nearby. The video shows there were no other, other people nearby. Had there been other citizens, that would be a huge factor. But I think that's a very helpful point for our side, that in addition to the officers, who obviously were armed and could protect themselves, there were not other citizens who were in danger. At most, he was a threat to himself, which is not a obviously constitutional basis to shoot somebody. And so, again, turning back to the Studdard case, we'll just turn back to the Sova case. The question is, did Sova put an officer in, after 1998 on notice that shooting somebody further away who was less of a threat, that would be unconstitutional? And Studdard, as Judge Sutton wrote, answered that question in the affirmative. The Studdard case is almost identical to this case in many respects. The suspect was about 30 feet away, and the court said that at the time of the shooting, the suspect began moving forward in a swaying motion and was shot at that point. So we have some movement. We have 30 feet away. Very, very similar to this case, except there the suspect, I think, had the knife actually raised and, again, was moving forward. I think there was some testimony that he was walking rapidly towards the officers, something of that nature. And this
Studdard is very close, but of course Studdard, it was 2019, right? So it was after the event, so that wouldn't help clearly establish per se.
Absolutely. But I believe sort of under a stare decisis principle that if Sova has clearly established the right at issue in Studdard, then I believe this court is constrained to follow that same precedent and say that Sova clearly established the right in this case.
That's why I wanted you to reverse direction. If you go Sova backwards, it helps you more than if you go Sova forward.
Absolutely, and I would love to, again, my memory of the Sova case, I just don't know that the language, I would wish it was, but I just, and I'm sure we'll all go back and look at that, and hopefully it's in there, I understand your point exactly, I just don't know that that's in the decision, in the Studdard case, I think it's basically the same set of facts, and this court said Sova put the officer in that case on notice. So we're not saying that Studdard made it clearly established here, since Your Honor is absolutely correct that that case had not been decided yet. I'm just saying that the same principle is warranted.
Judge Campbell also cited Studdard, didn't he?
He did, and again.
Distinguished it again.
He did, and he said, and I think he got the facts wrong at the end of the day. He said in both Sova and Studdard, the suspect was not moving towards the officers. And those cases make clear that the suspects were moving towards the officer. So I think he just got the facts of those cases wrong. And I also think that he got wrong in this case by saying that Mr. Groom walked towards the officers. So I think he was wrong on both sides. And I see my time is
okay.
Expired. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll hear from the other side. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Robert Burns and Samantha Burnett of the Nashville Bar. We represent the appellee, Captain David Russ, in this case. And for a few housekeeping matters, I actually anticipated your question about Sova. And my reading of that opinion is it went out on a factual dispute, the issue of qualified immunity, and clearly
on step one?
Yes, sir.
Step one of qualified
immunity. Yes, sir. And the cite to that is 142 Fed 3rd 898, and it is a 1998 case. Judge Gilman picked up on the fact, obviously, that Studdard was decided in 2019, and not to have any fun or to pick at my worthy adversary here, I will point out that the record in this case does have undisputed proof in it that there were other people in the area. Our client, Captain Russ, testified.
In the area, go ahead. What is it?
Yes, Captain Russ testified that he was concerned not only about the threat to his own safety, but the people that were close and nearby in the Walmart parking lot, one of whom actually provided and recorded one of the videos that's been submitted to this court, as well as Officer Jason Lee. So it's
what does the record say about how close they were to the...
The record, I think, establishes that the gentleman that filmed, that was in the Walmart parking lot near the gas pump or gas station, was approximately 30 to 40 yards away, and Lee was approximately twice, the other officer was approximately twice the distance from Mr. Groom as what our client was, but on the other side.
That'd be like 60 feet.
Yes, sir.
Behind him.
Yes, sir. 60 feet.
The person who was filming was obviously not too worried about his own safety if he was filming this situation.
Well, that I don't know, Your Honor.
Well,
he wasn't
logical
opposed, but
inference would be that, and we would make all inferences in
perhaps
favor
so,
of
and
side,
he clearly was at a further distance than what our.
You agree that we do make all inferences in favor of the component to your position.
Yes, certainly. But I point that out only to make the record clear that there were other people in the area. In regard to the appeal itself and our position with the arguments that have been brought up, I think it's a bit telling that this morning, Mr. Ray.
Can I just ask you one other thing about the risk to other people? Because it does seem like a relevant point. What might you say, though, in this situation where everything makes it look like he's a risk just to himself?
I'm sorry?
It looks like he's a risk to himself is the main threat, and you might just let that settle, except that from their perspective, he seems to be, you know, coming forward. He seems to be behaving irrationally. How does that factor into it, that the main threats are to himself?
When you say himself, you mean Mr. Groom, or?
The decedent looks like decedent wants to die. In other words, the decedent doesn't look like he's out looking to hurt other people. Well, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm telling you that's one way to look at it.
The Ms. Lee in this case focuses really only and bases her appeal on the snapshot of what is seen in the video for the 10, 14, 16, 18 seconds. The period of time when Mr. Groom comes to a stop, he's approximately 30 feet away. And for the record, if it matters, 30 feet, Mr. Rabin and I agree to this, is the front of your bench to the next to last row of chairs. He stops, but he is still actively resisting. He's armed. We know what the knife looks like. It's a significant weapon. He has refused all commands to put the knife down. During the entire time that Captain Russ is on scene and after he gets out of the car, Mr. Groom continues to come forward to him, disregarding every command 5, 6, 7 different times. Admittedly, he does admit, here he says words to the effect of, shoot me, you're gonna have to kill me, but he also says, quote unquote, not today, David, which can certainly be inferred that he's not going peacefully and he intends to fight either our client or the other officer on the scene.
He stops for like 20 seconds, doesn't he?
It's approximate. It can be debated, and the video is not entirely clear, but I agree it is helpful. But he does stop, but then it can be seen on the video that he takes another step. He doesn't stand there. He doesn't retreat. He doesn't turn around.
At that point, his knife is at his waist, right? Not raised up to stab someone.
It's tough to show, Judge, but I think that is correct in terms of what can be seen. But the distinction here is that the knife has not been dropped. He's been told a number of times to drop the knife, and he refuses to do that.
Isn't it disputed whether he takes a step towards Officer Russ or to the side?
Well, at the district court, I didn't think it was, and I didn't think that it was disputed until this appeal got filed. And again,
looking at the video, you think it is entirely clear that the step was taken towards Officer Russ?
Yes, I do. I think that a reasonable interpretation is that he takes a step.
It has to be the only reasonable interpretation.
I'm sorry?
For you to make that point, it has to be the only reasonable interpretation, not a reasonable interpretation.
Well, the district court found, and in addition, the record shows that plaintiff at the district court did not specifically dispute the characterization of that step.
But we can look at the video, as I have,
yes,
and say it's not at all clear which way that step was going, in part because of the nature of video. It was hard, at least for me, to figure out which way the step was going.
We can agree that there was a step. We can also agree that the record is undisputed that Mr. Groom never complied with any of the commands to stop doing what he was doing. I think that this court can and should find that he was actively resisting the entire period of time until Captain Russ decided to shoot.
And assuming all that's true, how do you distinguish the Sova case?
Well, that case, I believe, and it was distinguished, I believe, more so by the district court in terms of the fact that the decedent in that case was more of a threat to himself. It was more of a suicide case, if you will.
And you solve suicide by killing him?
Well, no, not necessarily. But in terms of what the threat assessment, that's the way I interpreted So then it's also the way I interpreted Judge Campbell's review and interpretation of the case as well, how that can be distinguished from
the facts that we have here. Was there any threat that Mr. Groom made to Officer Russ? Verbal threat. Was there any verbal threat?
The words, quote unquote, not today, David,
right.
I think can be interpreted as that.
That's a threat, or is that just saying, I don't want to be arrested today, or many other possible interpretations?
That's a subjective question, Your Honor, and it depends on how anyone
would interpret that.
Yes, but given the circumstances with him being armed and him being told to stop doing what he was doing, to quit resisting, to drop the knife, commands by two different officers, I think it's reasonable for this court to interpret that that was a threat. It was a threat that I don't intend to comply, and whatever it is that is necessary to take me into custody or to put this situation out is not going to happen.
Did Officer Russ know Mr. Groom?
Yes. Not greatly, but he did know.
They had a longstanding relationship, having to do with Mr. Groom being friends of a stepson of Mr. Russ or something like that?
I wouldn't characterize it as a long stand. They knew one another. They weren't running buddies by any stretch.
Right, but the fact that Groom said David as opposed to officer.
Oh, certainly.
Would suggest that
yes,
they
certainly.
Knew who they were.
Right.
And presumably he, Russ knew something about Groom being troubled or being somebody who was getting, so he'd gone to the pharmacy to get a prescription for
yes.
Suboxone
right.
and was denied the coverage for it and then walked away with the prescription
right.
and the pharmacy called in that
yes,
he had gone away.
Tech.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And it was a 911 call. It's armed robbery. It was described as a machete, so the officers on the scene knew that he was armed to some extent. They didn't know the nature of the knife, and I don't know if you have seen it in the record, but this isn't a small 1 to 2 inch knife. This was the Bowie knife of sorts that was pulled out, and this knife was pulled out.
I'm just going back to Sova. I feel like both cases are cases where the individual's unstable, a risk to themselves. It seems like you could say that about both cases. And in Sova, in the second encounter, it's 6 to 9 feet away. I mean, we're going to do the courtroom. That's this.
Right.
And they don't get qualified immunity there. And 30 feet, and it's both their knives. I mean, it just seems like that's the harder case. And
Sova,
help me there.
Sova, I will, or I'll certainly try to. Sova, as I read it, I don't want to say it was a pure suicide case, but that's how that case was set up. This was not. Sova was also a much longer
But you know the problem with someone who's thinking about suicide? They're willing to kill themselves. It's quite possible they're willing to kill anybody else around. So in other words, it's a scary situation for the person trying to straighten it out. And it seems to me that's true in both cases.
Well, I think that this issue highlights the difficulty of the situation that the officer has to encounter and the difficulty with the split-second nature of what he perceives as a threat. And then Mr. Groom taking what we I think
that
we
suggests Sova's wrong.
I'm sorry.
That would suggest Sova was wrong, but we can't do that. And you know, I think the implication from Sova is listen, when you've got a situation where it's you know suicide by cop, that's the phrase. You're supposed to back off and get out of the way, and because as Judge Gilman pointed out, you don't stop a suicide by killing the person. So you try to bring a little more stability to the situation by backing off, not sticking with the encounter.
Again, Your Honor,
I don't... Seems like it's the same case here.
I respectfully, I disagree.
Okay.
This was not...
Not as much risk of suicide here.
I'm sorry?
Not as much risk of suicide, self-harm here.
I would say not, based on the record before you.
Huh.
Certainly not compared to the record as I read it in Sova.
So what is your best case?
I would say the Reek or Wright case, in terms of the way that it gets pronounced. If we have to go to the point of what my best case is, or what Captain Russ's best case is, we would point the court in that direction. But I would also point out that it's not my burden to show, it's plaintiff's burden here on this appeal to show that there was clearly established law, and they've kind of going to great effort to say that this is an obvious case when we submit that it's not an obvious case. The majority of his argument, of Mr. Rabin's argument, is tied around the idea that we shouldn't even get into this debate about Sova, Reek, other cases, that this is simply so obvious on its face that we shouldn't take the particularized, specific type of analysis that this circuit has done, as have many other circuits for a long period of time. The obvious case is the case where a police officer handcuffs an individual and then gratuitously applies force to him or her for no reason. That's not what we have here. We have a fairly detailed and, if not complicated, type of timeline in terms of the interaction and then ultimately what Captain Russ had to decide at the end of the encounter, which admittedly and unfortunately led to this man's passing. I would submit that this is the classic case where an officer who is put into a situation, certainly not by his own doing, and is called upon to make the split-second decision, and he should not be judged with the benefit of 20/20 hindsight, that all of us, understandably, are now trying to apply to this to undo what we say was a lawful act on his part.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. So, Mr. Rabin, you have a little rebuttal?
Chief Judge Sutton, I looked through SOVA trying to find that magic language, and I don't think it's there as far as identifying.
Is it more of a prong one qualified immunity case? Is that what's going on?
I don't necessarily think so, because the court definitely doesn't say that. The court articulates the standard. It recognizes the clearly established law, and basically the court says there's sort of a dispute over the facts, and then the court ultimately says that the linchpin of the case turns on whether the shooting was reasonable, whether the officer reasonably believed there was a threat. The court said if so, then it's not excessive. And so I think in a way the court almost adopted my sort of obvious case argument without saying so, and basically just said if the officer was in fear,
it's like a motivated reading, but keep going.
I agree that would be helpful for my case.
I didn't even know you existed.
I think that's the best way to read the case, quite frankly, because the court doesn't identify the clearly established prong, and yet it doesn't say that.
I don't even think, isn't that Hope versus Peltzer? I don't even think the obviousness theory was even out there in 98,
was it? The
principle,
at least. I think that's kind of what I'm getting at with the obvious case principle, is at the end of the day, you know, the whole point of that doctrine is if something is so clearly excessive that it's so obvious that the officer didn't need to shoot the person, we don't need to find a prior case where that exact same thing happened. Or else officers, that would just take qualified immunity too far, and more importantly, too greatly reduce our Fourth Amendment right that ultimately is the whole point of civil rights cases, is we have civil rights not to have our constitutional rights violated. And again, I think that's what that whole line of cases says. If it's obvious enough, we don't need to find a case right on point. And so I think that a jury could at least find in this particular case, looking at the video, looking at the movements of Mr. Groom, the distance and all of that, that a reasonable juror could say, yeah, and it's just obvious that shooting was not necessary, that the officer was not in fear. So I definitely am not hanging my hat on that argument. I'm definitely relying on SOVA under the more traditional analysis. But I do think that that is a fair argument in this case, that just given the video, it I think a reasonable juror could just find that shocking, given the relative movement involved. And I think, you know, I just want to address in the brief time I have left, as far as Mr. Burns calling it sort of a snapshot of the video, that we're too laser focused in on the last moments. And I think the case law allows us to break things into pieces. And what's important is the other officer, Officer Lee, says that why he was surprised by the shooting is he said that the suspect did de-escalate. Whatever was happening before, the suspect himself de-escalated by stopping, you know, not yelling, put his arms down. And so I think that is a significant change in circumstance, and that you know, I think that step has to be looked at in that context. Thank you very much.
Thanks to both of you for your helpful briefs and arguments. We appreciate it. The case will be submitted, and the clerk may call the next case.